Matthew chapter 22. And Jesus answered and spoke to them again by parables and said, so in case the Pharisees and chief priests and all of them didn't understand his story about them in the previous chapter, here's another one. The kingdom of heaven, or the church, is similar to a certain king who made a marriage for his son. Now, I think that this is representative of God giving the church to Christ as his bride. Okay, and sent forth his servants, that's probably going to be your prophets and your apostles, to call those who are invited to the wedding. That would be the Jews. The Jews were called first. And they would not come. Again, he sent forth other servants, you know, more prophets, more apostles, saying, tell those who are invited, behold, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the marriage. Now, I think this is referring to the limited commission from Matthew 10. So remember, he sent out his disciples to, and he said, just go to the Jews first. You know, we're going to take the law of Christ and present the law of Christ and the coming church to the Jews first. The Gentiles will, of course, get an opportunity too, but they got it first. So that would be the limited commission. I think that's what he's referring to here. But a lot of the Jews were like, no, and they rejected him. But they made light of it and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his business. And the rest took his servants and treated them spitefully and slew them. So we know how much the apostles were persecuted. I think a lot of them ended up being killed. So he's making a prediction here too. But when the king heard of it, he was angry. So when God saw that the Jews were rejecting Christ and the church and the law of Christ, he was angry. And he sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. I believe this is a prediction of what's going to happen in AD 70, the Roman armies coming and destroying Jerusalem. Then he said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. In other words, the Jews have rejected Christ. Therefore, go into the highways and invite to the marriage as many as you find. Now he's talking about Gentiles, all non-Jews. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all and as many as they found, both good and bad, and the wedding was furnished with guests. Now I think this is referring to the Great Commission, which we will read in Matthew 28 when we get there. So first there was a limited commission, where the gospel was taken to the Jews first. The Jews, for the most part, rejected it. They didn't like who this Messiah was. He just wasn't what they expected. And, you know, he's just a carpenter's son. He's born in Bethlehem and grew up in Galilee. I mean, this just wasn't what they were expecting. So they rejected him. So now he's sending the gospel out to everybody else in the world called Gentiles. Now they're going to have access to it. And what's bad is more Gentiles obeyed the gospel than the Jews. And that's a shame, because the Jews had no excuse. I mean, they were God's chosen people for years and years and years to bring Christ into the world. They had the Old Testament. They had the law of Moses. They knew all this was coming. And yet when it happened, they rejected it. So they really don't have a good excuse. And it says, and the wedding was furnished with guests. So this would mean, and the church that Christ established was filled with faithful Christians, a lot of them being Gentiles. Of course, Jews too, the obedient ones. And when the king came in to see the guests, so God is, figuratively, God is going into the church and checking out his children. He saw there a man who did not have on a wedding garment. Now, I used to think this meant somebody who had not been baptized and was therefore not a member of the church. I don't think that's what he means, because this man was in the wedding. So this man was in the church. I think this means that this man was not a faithful Christian. And he said to him, "Friend, how did you come in here not having a wedding garment? How did you get into the church when you are not being, why are you still here, basically, when you are not a faithful, obedient Christian?" And he was speechless. The man just didn't have an excuse. I mean, what do you say? Then the king said to the servants, "Bind him hand and foot and take him away and cast him to outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So we know this is talking about judgment day. This is what's going to happen to unfaithful Christians who are in the church. They're going to be just as lost as all these Jews who rejected Christ. "For many are called, but few are chosen." Well, many is everybody. Everybody is called. In other words, everybody has access to the gospel of Christ, but few are chosen. In other words, few are actually going to believe and obey. Then the Pharisees went and took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk. And they sent out their disciples to him with the Herodians, saying, "Master, we know that you are true and teach the way of God in truth." They're trying to use flattery here. "You do not care for any man, for you do not regard the person of men." In other words, you don't have a respecter of persons. You're not a respecter of persons. "Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to give tax to Caesar or not?" I mean, what a dumb question. They're basically saying, you know, should we be paying taxes to Caesar? But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, "Why do you tempt me, you hypocrites? Show me the tax money." And they brought him a penny. And he said to them, "Whose is this image and inscription?" They said to him, "Caesar's." Then he said to them, "Therefore, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." Sure, he was thinking, "And stop asking stupid questions." When they heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. The same day, the Sadducees, who say there is no resurrection. So you've got Pharisees who are religious leaders. They do believe in the resurrection. You have another sect of religious leaders called the Sadducees. They do not believe in the resurrection. Came to him and asked him, saying, which again, this is a stupid question because they do not believe in the resurrection. And yet they're going to ask him a resurrection question. "Master, Moses said that if a man dies having no children, his brother shall marry his wife and raise up offspring for his brother." So this is the law of Moses, and yes, this is correct. Now, there were with us seven brothers, and the first deceased when he had married a wife, and having no children, left his wife to his brother. Likewise, the second also, and the third to the seventh. And last of all, the women also died. So they're putting forth this ridiculous scenario of like, okay, this woman married a man and he died. So his brother took her and he died. And then his brother took her and he died. And there were seven brothers and they all took her when the other brothers died. "Therefore, in the resurrection," which they don't even believe in, "whose wife of the seven shall she be? For they all had her." Why they're asking him this question, I don't know. They don't believe in the resurrection, and what difference does it make? "Jesus answered and said to them, 'You err, not knowing the scriptures or the power of God.'" Boy, there's a lot of people that Jesus would say that today. They have all of these ideas about God and Jesus and the Bible and the church, and it's just all stuff that they came up with. Jesus would probably tell them, "You err, not knowing the scriptures. For in the resurrection, they shall neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are as the angels of God in heaven." So in other words, on judgment day, when we're all no longer in our physical bodies, there's not going to be any marriages. My husband and I are not going to be married. I hope very much that we know each other and remember each other, but we're not going to be married. There is no marriage after the end of time. which also indicates the angels do not participate in any kind of marriages. They're spiritual beings. But concerning the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what was spoken to you by God, saying, and this is from Exodus 3, verse 6, I am the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. God is the God, not of the dead, but of the living. And when the multitude heard this, they were astonished at his doctrine. But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, when they heard that Jesus had shut them up, they were gathered together. Then one of them, who was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now, these verses are probably in several places in the Bible, but Joshua 22:5, Deuteronomy 11:13, and Leviticus 19:18 are at least three passages that say that. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. And this is true. If you think about it, if this was the only two commandments that we had from God, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself, everything else would fall in line. If we obey those two commandments, everything else would fall in line. We wouldn't have to have... Can you imagine if our country only had these two commandments? The world would be a much better place. But we have to have thousands and thousands and thousands of laws, very specific laws, that all would fall under one of these, love God or love your neighbor. But we have to be very specific because people just don't want to do what's right. While the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them, saying, What do you think of Christ? Whose son is he? Again, he's referring to himself in the third person. Of course, he knows that the Pharisees don't believe he's the Christ. They said to him, The son of David. He said to them, Then how does David in spirit call him Lord, saying, and this is from Psalm 110:1, The Lord said to my Lord, Sit on my right hand until I make your enemies your footstool. And what that passage is really saying, the first Lord is God. The second Lord is Christ. So the passage could read, God said to Christ, Sit on my right hand until I make your enemies your footstool. If David then calls him Lord, calls Christ Lord, how is he his son? It doesn't really make much sense, does it? And no man was able to answer him a word, and from that day forth, no man dared ask him any more questions. And that is Matthew chapter 22.